Good afternoon, members. My name is Cindy Bali. I'm the committee secretary for the Joint Standing Committee, and my colleague Mpholosile Mngatshi is sitting with me today because he's our content advisor. We're also joined by Lisa Webb and Venetia Williams and Hlanhla Mrere, who's our committee assistant. So for the purposes of the first part of the meeting, we're going to nominate co-chairpersons from the National Assembly component and a co-chairperson from the NCOP component. So I'll call for nominations, and I'm requesting that the person who nominates a member should please also, just for the record, provide us with their name. Okay, so we'll start with the NA side. So only the National Assembly members will participate in the voting. Are there any nominees?
I'm afraid with the statement was just uttered. Is it only the women are going to vote here because it's only, you said that they must provide her name. She said that a person going to nominate must provide her name. Are the men not allowed to vote?
You are a member of the ANC
All right. Chairperson, secretary, I nominate the name of Honorable R.M. Peggy Zizo Khatebe, the member of the NA. I'm nominating the name of Honorable Peace Mabe to be the chairperson on the side of the NA.
Mr. Faiso?
Okay, my name is Kolisile Kaiso. I'm from NA. I'm seconding the name of Honorable Peace Mabe to become a chairperson.
Thank you, sir. Any further nominations? There are none. In the absence of any further nominations, Ms. Mabe is now declared the co-chairperson for the NA component. We'll now move to the NCOP component. Only the NCOP members will participate. Mr. Nyambi.
Thank you. My name is Jomo Nyambi, representing Mpumalanga province in the National Council of Provinces. I nominate Honorable Dikeledi Mahlang as a co-chair.
Okay. Seconders? Hi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mandla Khai, representing the Eastern Cape in the National Council of Provinces. I second the name of Honorable Dikeledi Mahlang.
Thank you, Mr. Are there any further nominations? In the absence of any further nominations, Ms. Mahlang is now declared co-chairperson for the NCOP Conference. You can now come and take your seats, right. And we'll vacate you.
Good afternoon, honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity. It is a very difficult task because co-chairing means it's always about sharing
So I want to first assure my co-chairperson that I'm the middle child, so sharing is always in my agenda. I've never owned anything that belonged to me alone, so I've shared throughout my life. So, yes, I've shared everything throughout my life. So I'm a middle child, I'm used to that. I share everything. Let's leave it at that. I think the second biggest challenge is that the most senior person of the African National Congress is a member of this committee, Medoris Lakude. She's the deputy chief whip, so there's no time to fault her because she'll be watching us every time. So she's the reason why we'll always be kept on our toes. And also leaders of political parties, Mr. Vesthuizen, the chief whip of the Democratic Alliance, Mr. Singh. Oh, sorry. Are you the chief whip? Yes, I've said that. You're the chief whip. No, I said the chief whip. I can't elevate you to that position. Not now. Mr. Singh, I know he's also the chief whip of the Inkatha Freedom Party. Sheikh Imam, I'm not sure about your position. Are you the chair? Oh, so yes. So we are also humbled by the fact that we chair senior members of Parliament. I would want to give Ms. Mahlangu an opportunity to also say something so that we can now start with the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much and good afternoon to honorable members. Let me first start by appreciating and acknowledging the responsibility given upon me that together myself and honorable member Mavi, we will make everything possible that we make it work, because the responsibility given the nature of the members that are participating in this committee, it means it's huge. We have to work together to make sure that Parliament does work. And I also want to appreciate the support of everybody, including my former colleague, student, honorable team, and honorable Julius. I think there's no agenda why my co-chair did not mention you, all of you, members from the ANC, my leader, Deputy Chief Whip, the chairperson, the House chairperson, Honorable Joe Monyambi, the honorable member from the EFF. We also appreciate your support, and we want to commit that we will make sure that learning from the previous term in the fifth parliament, this is a new committee, we will make improvement, and we will always welcome your constructive criticism and your advices at all times to make sure that we work together. Thank you very much. Honorable Mabi, you can continue with the program.
Thanks, Co-Chair. For progress and record, I would want to propose that we formally introduce ourselves so that we know who is here and on what capacity, that we do that in less than 5 minutes, including the support staff, also to thank them for preparing for preparing for this meeting, the documents that they've compiled, and the venue and all that, the work that they have done. We also acknowledge and we thank them. I am Peace Mabi. I represent the African National Congress. I am from Gauteng Province.
Dikeledi Mahlangu is my name. I come from Mpumalanga, permanent member in the NCOP, representing the ANC. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Nhlanhla Ncobendaba. I'm the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Women, Youth and Persons Living with Disability. I'm here just to give you support for now.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Co-Chairperson. I'm Pegzizo Khatebe, a designated whip for this joint committee on behalf of the ANC. And the former member is our alternate. We are going to ATC next week. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Members. I'm Doris Eunice Lagute, a member of this committee. I just want to record the apology of Comrade Maina Lisuma, who lost her brother on Tuesday. So she's part of this committee and will be joining us in future. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Molezan Molezane from Free State, representing EFF. And a member of this committee.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Malda Khai from the ANC, representing the Eastern Cape in the National Council of Provinces. I would like also to take this opportunity to also apologize that this meeting clashes with the sitting in the NCOP. We have a debate on employment and labor. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee. I'm one of the speakers. So I will have to go back to the sitting, and then after speaking, then I'll come back and join the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Kolisile Kaiso. I come from Free State. I represent ANC, and I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
My name is Jomo Nyambi from the National Council of Provinces. I come from the most beautiful province in South Africa, Mpumalanga.
Sanibonani Nonke, Giengu John Steenhuisen, Gisuga e KwaZulu Natal, Democratic Club.
Good day, Jacques Julius, Deputy Chief of DA from Western Gauteng, like the co-chair, brother.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tim Bratiset. I'm from the best rugby-playing province in South Africa, KZN, representing the NCOP. Thank you.
Good morning, co-chairs. My name is A.M. Sheikh Imam from the National Freedom Party. Also, allow me to apologize because there's a sitting on international relations in the National Assembly, which I'll need to leave shortly. Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs. Congratulations. My name is Naren Singh from the best curry and rice province in the country. And Bunny Chow. Thank you. Pleasure to serve again on this committee.
Members, in anticipation of this meeting, we prepared this. My name is Cindy Bali. I'm the committee secretary.
My name is. Good afternoon, coaches and members. My name is Tolisile Mkachi. I'm the current advisor for the committee.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Mbuyiselo Hlekiso, the researcher of this committee.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Nhlanhla Mabaso, executive assistant in the office of the House Chairperson Committee's Oversight, NCOP. I'm here supporting the member.
Good afternoon, co-chairs. My name is Siyabonga Ngibi. I'm from the Western Cape, Cape Town. I am a senior monitor for the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Lizo Webb. I'm the executive secretary for Ms. Mishlanga.
Good afternoon. I'm Venetia Williams. I'm the deputy director, Ms. Mabe.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Nsanjlan Khoekhoek. I'm the committee assistant of the Parliament Secretary.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Christopher Scholes, and I'm representing an organization underdoing tax abuse, OTA. Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairpersons and honorable members. My name is Maureen Johnson. I'm in the office of the co-chair, Ms. Mahlangu. Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Darren Arons. I'm the former committee secretary to this committee. I'm just visiting today. Thank you.
I'm the acting chief of staff, Crystal Bornholz, to Mr. Steenhuisen. I'm here supporting the DA members of the committee.
All right, thank you very much. We want to quickly take advantage of the quorum and allow the committee secretary to quickly take us through the program for this term, so that we if we agree, then we adopt it.
Chairperson, thank you. And I'm sorry to raise the chair, but it is important before we commence with discussing the annual program, and that's to get a complete understanding about what this committee's responsibilities are. To give a bit of history, this committee was created during the Fifth Parliament in line with the legislation. But in creating this committee, the Parliament's presiding officers collapsed what was then known as the, the liaison committee, the parliamentary oversight mechanism into this committee. Now, you know, that's all well and good, but if you look at the program and you look at the work that we did in the Fifth Parliament, it's everything to do with the finances of Parliament and very little to do with the other matters that the old parliamentary oversight mechanism used to do. And so I think we do need to get some clarity further on, because there is now a lacuna in Parliament where matters have fallen that used to be dealt with by the old body that, you know, should have been dealt with here, but where we've been dealing with finances, and it goes nowhere in terms of exercising oversight over Parliament as an institution, not necessarily just the finances. You know, there's two models of oversight. It's what's happening in the institution as a whole, and, you know, what's going on in the various offices, etc., but also of the finances. So I think we need to just get clarity, because if we're just going to do the finances, that's fine, but then Parliament needs to create some mechanism for us to exercise oversight over what's happening in the rest of Parliament, because the two actually are connected, and it would make more sense for this to be the landing ground for all of those issues. But, you know, I just want to get clarity, because then we need to find another mechanism where we can raise those other issues that don't necessarily fall strictly under the finances. If I look at the program that we're about to proceed with, it looks completely 100% dominated by the financial management of Parliament, which is separate from the oversight and accountability mechanisms that should be, that Parliament should have for Parliament. If I may just respond to you, it's not only Labour.
I agree with Honourable Steenhuisen, but we can't discuss that matter here. We have the
new House Chairperson dealing with internal arrangements, can we take this further with her instead of wasting time here, my friend? Let's do that, especially on the oversight part, to make sure that the other structures are established, like POA, yeah, because here we have members who are supposed to be in the sittings and we're supposed to be debating, so it will take us long to conclude them.
Thanks, Chair. My concrete proposal to this issue, because it's very important, I suggest that so that we are able to do justice to it, we can look at the program with a proviso to accommodate the important point that has been raised by Honorable Steenhuisen, that we are going to cater for a day where we look at what we'll be doing as this committee so that we can be able to do justice to it. Because now we might leave something that is very important. But let's look at the program, and if we're going to adopt it, we'll adopt it to the proviso that says, no, we'll have a day that we'll try to go through it and cover it.
Yeah, Co-Chair, I agree with that. Because there's the other group called the Quarterly Consultative Forum, QCF. We do work there as well, and there's no way, it doesn't find a home anywhere. So I think let's get a position paper prepared by the content advisor, the researcher or somebody, on how we can synergize, and then we can discuss it.
Fine. Part of the program does cover that. Okay, please take us through quickly.
And then if you look in any of the documents you provided at the beginning of the meeting, that's in the file, the loose ones. So, yes, we've got the program, and we're proposing that our very next meeting be at 2 with the Secretary to Parliament to brief members on the 2019-2020 budget and APP, so that members have some background before the debate on the 16th. Then we are proposing that the next meeting be on the 18th. It's a Thursday, July, between 1 and 2, for a preparatory session with the team on the draft budget and APP for the next financial year, because this committee must consider the draft APP and budget as well. Then the 19th, the next day, we're proposing that the Secretary comes to brief the committee on the same issues, on the same matter. And then we're proposing part one of an induction program for members on the last day of the term, where we will take the committee through the briefing, the roles and powers of the Joint Standing Committee, Parliament's responsibilities in terms of the FMPPLA, and the fifth Parliament's legacy report. We are then proposing that as part two of the induction that must now take place at the first meeting of the next term, we can discuss issues like the Parliamentary Oversight Authority, the establishment and role of the Treasury Advice Office, Parliament's budget process, the strategic plan of the sixth Parliament, progress on its drafting, and an update on the drafting of the regulations to the FMPPLA.
That's the proposal. Can we get
Chair?
Completero? Honorable Dor?
Honorable Dor. Okay. Honorable Peace, Chairperson.
I don't know how to address you.
Honorable Dawood.
Okay.
Yeah. Honorable members, now if my watch is correct, it's 25 past 1. So why are we getting the briefing at 2? Because you have made your opening remarks and inputs. So why can't we have the Secretary to Parliament to come and brief us now? Why are we breaking? Because some of us, time is against us. If we break now, we have other responsibilities that we'll attend to.
I think
Thank you.
we are at the point where we have presented the program.
I understand that.
Now we
but
want
the
to
secretary, the committee secretary said, we will break and come back at 2. That is what she said.
Is there a reason for us to break? When we drafted the agenda for today, ma'am, we weren't sure how long the election was going to take. But I'm in contact with the secretary's office so that they can come as soon as we are done.
We are done. That's what we
please get. Now, can we get a mover for the adoption of the program? Honorable Singh?
I move.
Honorable Singh moves. Any seconder? Okay. Mr. Hai. Honorable Hai.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mavi. It's not really a break, as suggested. Can we just allow the secretary? I'm told that she's on her way here. She's almost here. As soon as she's here, then we start with the presentation. Can we do that? Thank you.
Oh, so we went to the same one.
Yeah, I think I went to the same one, to the office.
Yeah, there by Adam.
At least, yes, yeah. I went there for that one as well.
Because of what?
And then it was my understanding that there was a lady that also applied for it. But I'm not sure if it's like 100% accurate.
How did you hear about it?
I saw on the website, on the webpage, there's like an opening. And then I meet him here at Bali once. And then like approach him and ask him like, hey, what's happening? Because I had a discussion with him like two years prior to that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's like, no, it's still in this no place. So yeah. And then yeah, and then approach him again and he's like, set my eyes open on this and this and this month. And then like, boom. I applied and whatever, sent through my stuff. And then I had an interview with him. And then I had another interview with HR. And then I just went away. I mean, yeah.
You went to Joburg as well?
Not only afterwards. Only afterwards I found out that like I've been approved. And I didn't even plan anything, man. I was like home for almost a month. But no pay, no money, nothing. And still working for 7 minutes and whatever, and they pay me peanuts. It's crazy, man. Yeah. I don't know how did you manage, man?
Chris, are you going to...
Colleagues, how's it?
How's it, boss?
How are you, man?
And Matthias, you came late and you are disrupting us. Welcome. Oh, welcome. Anyway, I didn't say you must debate with me. I'm saying welcome. You are welcome, Matthias. Yeah. And reserve that for another time. You know, you and I, we come from far. With that, I will finish it. The acting speaker of parliament is here. I mean, sorry, the acting secretary of the parliament is here. I'm going to allow her to introduce the team and who she's expecting to be part of the team. Yes, madam.
Thank you very much, Honorable Co-Chair, and good afternoon, Honorable Members of this committee. My division managers are still coming because I think in their diaries they still had 2 o'clock. I'm with Leo Sibanda, who is the manager in the Office of the Secretary. My name is Baby Penelope Gyawa. I am responsible for support services in Parliament, meaning that my position is that of a Deputy Secretary.
Just a moment, Acting Secretary. Can I just take this moment and welcome the Chief Whip of the Majority. Allow her to settle. And then, because I have welcomed, I waited for Honorable Member here from the DA, so I must also acknowledge you. Your presence is really appreciated. You can continue.
As I was saying, Co-Chair, that some division managers are still on their way. And I was also saying what my full-time job is, my correct one, Deputy Secretary to Parliament Support Services, currently Acting Accounting Officer of Parliament. First, I want to say I think we're delighted to actually provide you this briefing. And want to say that in the 5 years of Parliament, and at least of my being here from 2013, Parliament has been able to get a clean audit. The first year we had an audit with matters of emphasis, but subsequent to that we have been able to strengthen our internal controls so that we finally have a clean audit. We are expecting the final draft management letter from the Auditor General in the next, I think on the 15th of July. What we have been asked to do is share with yourselves the annual performance plan in light of the fact that that was submitted as per the plan in our FMPPLA. The FMPPLA, I think honorable members are aware of it. Chapter 3 of the FMPPLA explains exactly how planning should happen and how we should develop our annual performance plan within a 5-year strategy. And this is to prepare the members to engage with the budget that was already approved that we are spending on currently, which is 1920. So I will go through the slides, and our presentation will be background, program structure, budgetary information, program budget allocation, and, of course, the last one will be on monitoring evaluation. I am assuming that members do have that presentation. The first one is just to explain what I was saying. Honorable Chairpersons, that the FMPPLA outlines very clearly how we should plan, and it explains that 10 months prior to the start of a financial year, the accounting officer must develop an annual performance plan for Parliament, and that must be presented to the executive authority. That means the chair and the speaker of the National Assembly acting together, and those are the executive authority. And then, of course, it does also explain that at least 10 months prior to the start of financial year,
The accounting officer must prepare budget for parliament and present it to the executive authority. And the executive authority has to present this to the Joint Standing Committee on the Financial Management of Parliament, which is this committee. Some of the things that we will have to talk about later on is the extent to which this committee engages in the budget before we submit to National Treasury. In the past years, that shall I say months, that we have presented to the past committee, we did emphasize, and I'm happy that some members from the other last year are in this committee, we did emphasize the need that there hasn't been any sufficient interaction between members of parliament through a committee to engage with the budget of parliament. And you will see that because in South Africa, let me not say South Africa, maybe in other countries, there is no clear process on how parliament appropriates its budget. So we get allocations given by National Treasury to us by National Treasury. The only thing that we've tried to do, which we're doing successfully, we have now set up a technical team between ourselves and the DDGs of Treasury. And the FMPPLA indicates that before the budget is actually presented to Parliament, there has to be a meeting between the Executive Authority and the Minister of Finance to discuss the budget of Parliament, meaning that there should be an initial stage where Parliament engages with National Treasury to discuss its budget, so that you're not then subjected to the processes of the executive. And then you get a letter of allocation from Treasury just telling you exactly what you should be given. So on the next slide, what we are explaining to the members is, in April of 2018, we as senior managers sat down to do a SWOT analysis. We did a pastel. We discussed on the priorities with a view to really try and start drafting a framework for preparation for the coming strategizing session of Parliament into the new term. We also were able to review outcomes and indicators that we aligned to policy priorities. Obviously, the policy priorities have to be affirmed by the two houses for the term of this particular parliament. And what we also did, because we already had an allocated budget, we had to develop we developed operational plans, and obviously the operational plans are implemented through an annual performance plan. And then we then looked at the budget requirements, and you will notice later on that our budget requirements, given what we have been allocated, are showing a deficit across as the allocation of National Treasury. The next slide, all it does is it provides honourable members with the philosophical framework around which we plan. And on that, we take on the fact that we must plan long-term, that we have to align the work of Parliament in terms of the new NDP, that in it we have to factor in the global agenda of SDGs, and of course SADC Master Plan, AU Agenda. And in that, what we're trying to say is Parliament doesn't necessarily plan to the exclusion of all the other programs that talk to the AU, and of course alignment to the NDP, and of course the SADC Master Plan. So that's the philosophy that we retain when we plan. On the other slide, what we are sharing with yourselves is the parliamentary outcomes. These are obviously informed by the policy priorities, and policy priorities, the bulk of those come from the Constitution. And our APP and our strategy obviously is strengthened oversight and accountability. That's the outcome. The outcome is also to enhance public involvement. And if we are successful, we can see a very strengthened corporate government and intergovernmental relations, deepened engagement of international participation, and improved quality and impact of legislation. And these are the outcomes that we as officials support members to achieve through parliamentary work and guided by the mandate in the Constitution. For us to also assess our outcomes, we shall see improved capacity building programs for members. We want to implement that. We also have to assess improved timelines and quality of advisory and information services. And I want to just go back to these points so that I articulated them correctly. what do? We have a program that develops members and support members to, on a variety of matters. And some members would have experienced some of the programs and the courses that we have with the various universities, and some of the courses are the ones that we conduct internally. We also assess our timelines with respect to the quality of the advice that we give to yourselves and the information that we give to yourselves. And we also ensure that there are facilities and that are creating an enabling environment for members to work. And in that respect, we will talk about it later as and when we meet with yourselves later on around the refurbishment, addressing office space, and a whole range of other things. And then, of course, we're looking at the improved legislative sector cooperation in order to achieve outcome goals. We have a sector that we coordinate through the legislative sector, working with the various provinces and the various provinces, the 9th with the 10th province. So we have a forum of various speakers, and we have a sector program that we implement across the provinces. The next slide, honourable members, chair, co-chairs, it's just an image of how we are organised. And the next other slides will also show you just in some bit of granularity on how we are organized. The first is just to show you the uppermost offices. The executive authority would definitely be the NAN and COP. Under those, the offices that report parliamentary services, that would be all of the 1,300 employees. Parliamentary Budget Office. This is an office that stands independent and advises on the budgets of the departments, and they do budget analysis and reports to the Joint Standing Committees on Finance. Then, of course, we have the Legislative Sector Support. That is the entity that coordinates the work of the sector. All the 10 provinces, inclusive of Parliament, are coordinated through this entity. It is a unit or a section that is under the parliamentary, in terms of reporting to Parliament. Offices supporting Chapter 9 and 10 institutions, it's an office that reports directly to the Executive Authority. What we then have there is the Treasury Advice Office. The Treasury Advice Office, in terms of the Act, is supposed to be an office that ensures that the executive authority is assured that the budget, the irregular expenditure, the needs, the deficiencies in the budget, the financial statements are verified after being submitted from the CFO's office. So it's an office that gives the executive authority reassurance on how we're spending our budget. That office is not established in full. We've had a function, and that function is still being caretakered in the CFO's office. And indeed, we know it is not correct, and we have now engaged in a process where we can at least get one functionary. It is an office, in terms of the Act, that is not funded. However, what we think in this year, going forward in the 6th Parliament, we'll be able to establish just a functionary, maybe 2 people, that will start making sure that this office also become an office that generates regulations similar, almost like a national treasury for the legislative sector. And that's how it should function. It should critique the budget of Parliament. It has to assist the executive authority to ask for more budget. It has to also assess if we are spending money in the right places at the right time, and any unspent funds should actually not necessarily be at the discretion of the accounting officer on how it is used. It has to be communicated to the executive authority. So I'm saying to honourable members, this office is not fully fleshed, yet the function is done, but elementary. So that's what we're sharing with yourself. We have, which may not be in your presentations, and we will send it to yourselves, because we thought it's important for members to know how we are organized, and the print is very small, so I will not waste your time. What we try to show you there is we have the accounting officer. We'll try to share the structure with you. But we'll send these two slides to yourselves, and we'll come back and have a discussion. Because what we want to share with you is members should know what is the role of each division manager. If we say division manager, member support services, what is the role of that person, and what are the units under that particular manager? And our division managers are an equivalent of your DDGs in the public service. And under them is your director and deputy director, just to make a comparison with the public service. And so we have a DDG that is responsible for member support service. That area, that person is supposed to take care of all the needs of the members with respect to entitlements, travel, salaries, and liaises with the commission on a whole range of members' needs. Then we have a division that deals with infrastructure. That is the one we call the ISSD. It deals with the buildings, liaises with public works, the entrances or the gates with subs, and, of course, allocation of offices for members, parking. Over and above that is the real maintenance of the whole precinct. Then we have a division that is responsible for communications. So that's where we have our television, our radio, and press releases, media
leads. Sorry, Acting Secretary, can we confirm that the slide that we see there
will be sent?
It's not part
yes,
of the division.
There's two slides that are not in the presentation.
Okay.
That we thought this morning to just show you the one before that one and not share with you this one will be a problem. But it's not in your presentation. So I'm promising that we will send it to yourselves. It talks about how are we structured as officials in Parliament. So the 1,300 people, this is how we look like. I see Konapumi. So, but we'll come back to it when next we present to yourselves. But we just want to share that with you. We have to send it here. Then, of course, it's also revisited. Yes. The next one is also, it shows you how we have tried to change and revisit the way we are set up to support members. I will not waste your time on that, honorable members, because you don't have it in your presentation. But it's an important organogram of the institution that we'll share with yourself.
Yes, honorable member.
Chair, sorry, I really would like us to get a copy of this because it's very important. And I mean, are we going to be able to engage with this slide in this session? Because there's a position there of chief operating officer that's brand new, which I've never seen in Parliament before. Are we going to get an opportunity to engage with this slide, or?
Yeah, I will allow Honourable Jomo Nyambi, but I'll have a view on the matter because I've asked the acting secretary.
Chair. Yeah. Chair, I propose that. Let the acting secretary not get to the details of it until the day that she will come and we'll have the copy so that we can be able to engage and discuss it. Because now we'll be at a disadvantage if we don't have it.
Okay. This will sound or look funny because the commitment I had from the secretary is that she will send it to us afterwards, after the presentation. But because she has touched on it as she presents, if there's something that you have noted, I will allow you to raise a question because it's part of the presentation. Can we allow her to finish the presentation and note whatever slide that you want to come back to? You can continue.
In the first slide before this one, this is not what the structure of Parliament looks like. That is on the screen. The function, this slide before that, can we go back to that? That is what's in existence. We've got two deputy secretaries. One is support service, hence when I introduced myself, I said my position is that of a deputy secretary and I'm responsible for HR, ICT, ISSD, communications, and member support. Then you have the Deputy Secretary Corps, which is a position where Mr. Klaus is currently acting in, which has got your committees, it's got your researchers, it's got what we legal services, I think, and who else? National Council of Provinces and National Assembly. So international relations. So we're including that chair incorrect. We will come back and unpack these slides. So the second one that we've moved to is as a result of us seeing that the function, the type, the way we structured before does not serve the members effectively. We've gone through a whole analysis of the way we structured as officials of parliament. And now we're moving, we recommended a shared services. And that's a process that was guided by the executive authority in the fifth parliament. And we'll come back to that. This is the future. So the first slide is what we are. The future is the one that I think Honorable Steenhuisen identified COO. There is no COO in parliament. No. So I can move to the next. Their programs, as they are structured on this slide, Chairs, this is the programs as per the template and as per how we ask for budget. We have a program one, and this program, clearly, I'm sure honorable members can see, we refer to it as strategic leadership and governance. And in it, it's those various entities. I'll not waste your time and read them. Members can read them for themselves. Then we have program two on administration, which constitutes of those various entities. Then we have program three, which we refer to as core business. That's the core business of Parliament. We have program four, which we refer to as support services, and it's got those entities. Under that, it is obviously the divisions. Program 5, it's in associate services, and it has got all those divisions, and that's its role. And that's, this is how we then organize our budget, and this is how we then even organize what we ask for from Treasury that supports our execution or our implementation plan. For 2019 and 2020 financial year, the budget we have received from Treasury and presented by the Minister of Finance on the 20th of February is 2.5 billion. Overall, we, across those divisions that I was sharing with the members, we had requested 3 billion. We currently, in this financial year, have a shortfall of 482 million. And we can say that it's cumulative. In the past years, when we presented to the same committee, we explained to the committee that in 17, 18, 19, even earlier, we've had our budget cut by 348 million, and that's the very first one that Treasury cut when they were cutting across all the departments. And as a result of that, we've had a deficiency consistently across our OPEX, and also not being able to fill all positions that are necessary. We've had to go through an exercise of assessing the critical needs in the various areas for us to fill positions. And the 348 million, the bulk of it came from personnel. So this is what we are carrying as a deficiency. And then, of course, we have all the unfunded offices, including the Parliamentary Budget Office. I wish to say in this meeting, the Parliament Budget Office is not funded. It is a mandate that is not funded. Therefore, it then adds up to the Treasury Advice Office. It is also not funded. The next slide we're sharing with honorable members, it's just a breakdown of the 2.6. And I want to talk just a few things so that it's clear. The amount that is appropriated is 1.9. Direct charges is 527 million. Retained earnings, this would be because Parliament doesn't necessarily, in terms of the OPEX, we don't take back the budget, the money that we don't spend in a year back to National Treasury. We retain it. That's 17 million that we retain. And then we have own revenue, that is the, not 30,000, not 30 million, I'm sorry, 30 million. And then we've got donor funding, which is 40 million. the donor funding, we've been asked a lot of time, donor funding is the bulk of the EU funding that Parliament has always had from 1996 as a program funded by the European Union Parliament as a product of an agreement between South Africa and the European Union to fund capacity building for the legislative sector. So when we do the agreements with the University of Wits, University of UJ, and other programs to assist members to upskill wherever their needs are for upskilling, we use largely this budget. And it's a budget that's going to be, it's a donor fund that is going on until 2022. It is also directed, managed between National Treasury. It sits in the National Treasury. We get tranches thereof, but we pay at least 50% towards the salaries because a particular percentage goes to salaries. And it is driven by officials that are employed by Parliament. That is the how our budget looks like. So it's inclusive of all the other components. And I must say that this budget we're already spending. On the next slide, what we're trying to share with yourselves is the breakdown of the various of the budget into the various programs. So strategic leadership and governance. I think I must hasten to say that area includes the NA, NCOP, Office of the Chairperson, Office of the Deputy Chairperson, Offices of the House Chairs, and the support they have. Similarly with the NA, it's all the offices of the Speaker, the Office of the House Chair, the Office of the Deputy Speaker. That's strategic leadership and governance. Of course, in that there is also a budget of OISD and other components that belong to those offices. Administration, that would be the Office of the Accounting Officer, Internal Audit, FMO, and other offices that we will see later on. And then, of course, core business, as I said, it is your research, committees, international relations, and NA and NCOP, and that is the table stuff. Support services, I've explained what it is. It is your ICT, HR, it's facilities, communication services, and also, did I say member support? And the ICTs that will be your whole tools of trade, and everything else, of course, like your servers, a whole range of things. Associated services will be where we get the salaries of the members. And, of course, then we've got direct charges that should be. No, in fact, the direct charges are salary of members, associated services may be entitlements. And, of course, there's permits sitting there. The total allocation continuation on the next slide. What we're sharing with you there is the percentages as to which chunk of the budget goes where. Of the 2.3 that I have presented, you will see, honorable members, that the bulk of our budget, 28%, goes to associated services. Then it's followed by 20% to direct charges. So effectively, it's followed by the core business, which is 24%. Effectively, if we take off the pie chart green part and the blue chart, the blue part of the pie chart, Parliament operates with the one just on the left, on the right side. On my side is right, and then the opposite side will be left. And if we were just to say, what is the realistic baseline of Parliament budget? You need to take off all the budgets or the allocations that are going directly to members because we've got no control over that. And then work out the percentage that is left for us to say what is the OPEX of Parliament and how do we run Parliament on that budget. The next slide breaks it down onto what do we do with this budget. We have transfer payments, that's the blue part of the pie chart. Goods and services, that is for members' entitlement. Goods and services, that is our APP. And compensation to members, there it's about 20%, that's 527 million. And then compensation of employees, which is sitting at 1.1 million. or 1.1 billion, to put it correctly. And this is where we normally have a discussion with National Treasury to say, why do we have such a ballooned staff? It is an incorrect interpretation because Parliament in its nature delivers through human beings. Committees need researchers, need content advisors, committee support, a secretary. We need chefs, we need waitrons, and all of those constitute of employees and its warm bodies and its salaries. So it can never be that the budget of Parliament would be like in the private sector where 70% goes to OPEX and 25% or 30% goes to salaries. So, and we have standing, I mean, about 1,300 employees across in Parliament as we speak now. And our budget will always be slanted towards personnel. The next slide, honourable members, is we give you an allocation per program, and I've explained what that is. The Office of the Speaker, as I said, is 43 million, that's the total. And out of that, compensation is 34 million, and operation 9 million. And there's a breakdown there. I don't know if I should waste time reading out the figures, but it provides you with a breakdown of the figures for each of the offices. And I'm sure when we get questions, we can answer some more. Then, of course, we have Program 2, which is Administration, Office of the Secretary, 11.5 million, and compensation of employees is 9.7 million. And then we've got a breakdown of the Finance Management Office. Those are all the various divisions that fall under that office, including internal audit. And the projects, and projects are normally informed by the strategy and the type of strategic projects that are defined and agreed to by Parliament for us to implement in order to catalyze our strategy. The following program on core support, I've explained what core support is, and I've explained that those are the programs that we funded, and remember that this funding was as a result of our discussion and what we had done last year. Then comes Program 4, which provides, under it, it's the Deputy Secretary Support, Institutional Services, ICTs, Human Resources, Member Support. And this must read Program 4 Support Services. So we mustn't confuse it with Institutional Support Division, which is responsible for the infrastructure. Program 5 is a straightforward one. It's Members Facilities and Transfers to Political Parties. And we do give you a breakdown thereof. Then, of course, I think the last but one slide talks to Program 6, which is direct charges, not appropriated, comes directly from the National Revenue Fund. Additional requests. Initially, when I presented and started, I said we had asked for $3 billion and were given $2.6 billion. And I explained that it's cost the... They were cut on a whole range of areas. So we had asked for $3 billion. We received $2.6 billion. What it meant is that all the divisions had to go back and make sure that we reconciled our needs and our asks to the path that we've been given. And what we're showing in that area is what is it that we're asking for, meaning that does it mean if we do not receive some of these amounts, our work will be compromised? That is a discussion that will have to be held by both houses when strategizing processes and priorities are dealt with by both the NCOP members as well as NA members. So as we sit now, for 19-20 financial year, we have been given the 2.6, and if on the ask of $3 billion, we do have a shortfall of $394 million, as explained. And indeed, we continue to implement cost-cutting measures such as reducing printing and encouraging at least staff not to use a lot of printing and trying to automate certain processes. We have also rationalized. We used to have many, many multicolor printers. We've cut that down to shared printers, and we know that when we presented last year, co-chairpersons, we were asked even by members of Parliament to say, cannot we get into also shared printing in the various floors and the various parties? And that's a conversation we'll have to enter later on. And then we have also tried to automate as far as we can our systems. In this case, we are trying to automate the travel requests so that we stop printing the requisition forms and so on and so forth. We have asked our staff to also use Uvimba, which is our document management system, so that we don't print out paper. We just link onto the system and we get the documents from there. So we're trying the best we can. The biggest cut we have done is really on catering. And you will see, Honourable Members, that even with the State of Nation Address, we've cut quite drastically. I think that's the end of today's presentation with respect to a budget that has already been passed on which we are already spending. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I hope members have noted as you were presenting. I'll allow now members to entertain or ask questions for clarities, get into the discussions. If you don't have any member from your staff that wants to make additions.
Chair, they will definitely answer the questions.
Okay. Members, I will give you numbers. Can you raise your hands, those who want to speak on the matter, on the presentation? Number one, number two, number three, two more. Only the three hands. Okay. Okay, there's a special request here from the co-chairperson.
No, thank you, Chair. I wanted to propose that we consider the debate on the proposed structure when we consider the 2021 budget, which is going to be on the next meeting. It's just a proposal. I know that Mr. Steyn Hazen might want to speak on it, so I wanted to upfront propose that we spare that debate and entertain it by the time when we deal with the 2021 budget, which is in the next meeting. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I'm happy with that, but I would just like to know what time frames we're moving towards here, because what it said in the top left-hand corner of that presentation was it was approved, and I want to know by who and when.
Have you identified the number of the slides?
It was the organogram that's got the new position of a COO at the heart of it. Yeah. Well, I'd like to ask some more questions about it, but your co-chair suggested that we hold those questions over to the next debate, but I'm deeply concerned about that particular slide, and I would like to get my hands on it if possible.
Honourable Julius, you are number two.
Thank you, Chair. Just two questions. I'd like clarity on the key positions that must still be filled and what's the impact on operations. Because of those key posts that must still be filled. And I'd just like to ask a direct question from Parliament. At this stage, you already started spending the budget. At this stage, do you have money because of the shortfall? What's the impact at this stage in terms of compensation for employees, operations, members' facilities, direct charges, payment of members of parliament? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Nyambi, number three.
Thanks, Chair. Let's welcome the presentation, even though it was planned for two, but after we insisted that we start earlier and you were quick, Secretary, to be in and we're going to be able to attend other things. We welcome the presentation. The first thing, Chair, is to second the view that says we are going to be able to do justice to the issue of the structure once we have it. I agree with the proposal by your colleague, Co-Chair Mabe, that let's allow ourselves to have and then look at it, and then we are going to ask the questions in relation to the structure, because we do have some questions. The second one is the
is linked to the question of Honorable Julia's, the current situation of the finances of Parliament so that we can have a sense. My last question is about the issue of the PBO. The implications of it up to this far not being funded. I missed the sense of getting a direction of how we're going to be dealing with it. And it's got a direct impact on the finances of the institution. That is why you have got that very serious shortfall that is almost half a billion. So if maybe you can take us through and understand the plan moving forward, because it can continue as is. Thanks, Chair.
And any other afterthoughts that I need to note? Okay, you're the only one. I'll speak after you.
Thank you, Kochi. I appreciate that. Kochi, my question is simply about, can we please get a breakdown on the just over $1 billion that is spent on staff to get an idea of in which departments, how much money is spent, especially with specific reference to the executive offices, because it is a massive chunk of the budget. And then specifically, I know the co-chair and myself are recipients of that EU funding, but I'm sure the co-chair is also quite astonished that half of the money, $43 million, is spent on salaries, because we certainly didn't encounter 20 million rands worth of salaried people during the course of our studies. So I'd love to have a breakdown of who actually works to further the 43 million that comes from the EU in terms of salaries. Because you said 50% of it is salaried, unless I misheard you. But I really would like to ask the committee receives a breakdown of that over 1 billion rand in salaries. Who gets what? Not necessarily the people's names, but an idea of what's being spent. Thank you.
Okay, before I hand over to you, I will focus on slide number 14. The issue of own revenue. Maybe I'll give this to you as part of the induction so that we have an understanding on how do you generate revenue as an institution. Also, when you made a presentation there on the donor funding, I don't know if I misheard you or misunderstood you. You said something like already you have started spending this money. One would like to know, because the sixth parliament have just started, where is it spent? Because we have not yet started, like honourable member said, I'm part of the beneficiaries. We have not started yet with the upskilling program that is focusing on members. How and where is it spent? Just to give an idea. But I'm agreeing with the members that we'll have an opportunity to get deeper into the discussion when we have that induction workshop, because the mandate is also important. To understand the mandate, to also know what regulates this committee, how is this committee expected to function in as far as the bill is concerned or the act. Also, the concern, the last one, the Parliamentary Budget Office is extremely understaffed. We know the director, there was a decision in Parliament about the resignation, how when to release him, but he left earlier than we expected. It's leaderless, but also it's overstretched. And according to me, having been in that space, having gained from their assistance, I think they're overstretched, and it makes life difficult for them to carry out the mandate there's a reason why Parliament decided to have budget office, and they cannot, with the staff that they have, they can't service the Parliament accurately. Are there plans to attend to the issue of the understaffing? Thank you. Honourable Mats. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. I also want to reiterate on the establishment of the Treasury Advice Office, because once we have that, then accountability will be improved. And I also want to, maybe you'll explain to us later, not today, in one of the proposed meetings, where we are going to be unpacking the role and the mandate of this committee, because there is nothing that obliges this committee to participate on the parliamentary budget processes, because we are governed by the different legislation. I think it's something that we also need to unpack, but without the parliamentary treasury office, we are unable to get that. So it's one of the things that I feel that we need to prioritize. Yes. You've touched on another issue of the, though you just mentioned it in passing, Chapter 9 institutions. I also feel that maybe in this meeting it will not be possible for us to also go deeper into the Kada Asmal report on how did they, on how he advised with relation to the Chapter 9 institutions, on what is the role of Parliament, who's supposed to be funding Chapter 9 institutions, their mandate and their accountability, where do they account? I think the sixth Parliament also should be in a position to handle and really implement on the recommendations that were made. I'll also refer that, I just want to flag it, refer that to our meeting. I think it's on the program is there. The time frames, Honorable Westhazen has spoken about that.
Yes.
Steenhazen, excuse me. Time frames, very important, we want to know. I think another issue, if you can tell us the reasons why your budgets were cut. You've mentioned two reasons for me. You have said you have underperformed, I don't know on which program, and then what were the contributing factors? Why were you not able to spend your budget? Because in most cases, Treasury will cut your budget if you are unable to spend. Then they see a reason for them. They have a reason to reduce your budget. And you've retained something on your 17 million. That's where you did not spend. If I were to understand, yes, tell us where have you not spent that 17 million? And the donor funding, how effectively it's been used? And do you reach, what is the percentage per financial year of using the donor funding? And if I were to refresh my, let me just say, yeah, I think you also spoke about Program 6, but if I followed, I only learned that there are only five programs. Five. I don't know. I think I've heard you mentioning Program 6. Can you also clarify us what would Program 6 entail? It appeared to me as a revenue that, I don't know. Is there anything like that? Please, can you explain to us what Program 6 is all about?
Thank you very much for the questions. Can I hand over to you, madam, and your team to clarify members on the questions posed to you?
Thank you very much for the questions. Indeed, my DMs will also come in to answer. Let me just start with a simple one.
We've just written program six. Those are just direct charges. It's salaries of members, and that budget is not appropriated. It is a direct charge. It comes straight from National Revenue Fund. If we have a budget, anything that is not spent, it goes back to National Revenue Fund. So we were just compartmentalizing the budget. And I want to quickly just talk to, maybe I wasn't clear. I said the donor funding, they do not allow for the bulk to go into salaries. So from our compensation, Parliament, we pay 50% towards the managers who implement the program under donor funding. So the 40 million over a period of 5 years, 70% plus must go to the program. And the program is for the sector, the whole sector. There are year, I think I'm also answering the co-chair, where we're spending. Their year doesn't correlate with our year. It overlaps. So when we have designed a program for the 10 legislatures, there are programs that are running beyond our year. And that is not all the budget that we have from them. So we definitely don't take money from the donors. 50%, not at all. And it starts, it overlaps, ma'am. That is why we have the other programs continuing, because we would have started them later on. The development of manuals that were shared at the induction on oversight, on lawmaking, on public participation, those handouts and the products that were given to members during induction are as a result of that fund. And that was shared right across the 10 provinces, I'm saying so, including Parliament. I know Parliament is not necessarily a province, but legislatures. Let me say within the 10 legislatures. So that it runs overlapping. So that's what it does. I'm also going to answer Treasurer. I'm happy to say when we realized that the Treasurer office is important, we approached what was formerly called GTEC. They call it something else. It's a technical advisory council in National Treasury, and we asked them for assistance to establish the Treasury office. But we realized that that's also going to cost us money. So we have a project team now. We've done an analysis. We've done the functions of this office, and we're hoping that in the next month or two, at least we will be able to afford to pay at least one or two people or reprioritize within our staff somebody who is going to anchor that office, because indeed it is an important office to support the executive authority. The budget cuts, co-chairs, I must say, in the past committee, the co-chairs of this committee said they were going to work with the executive authority to assist in unpacking the budget of Parliament and make sure that we do not just get given budget by Treasury. So it is within the powers of the political leaders of this institution to make sure that, the timing is bad now because the country is in a fiscal constraint. But the truth is, officials cannot do more than us meeting with the technocrats of Treasury. The committee last year, last term, if I may, said the co-chairs are going to work with the executive authority to try to find a way in which Parliament's budget is not necessarily at the discretion of National Treasury. And that, I suppose, co-chairs, is what you may want to take up. At the level of technocrats, we sit and we work with the technocrats. And truth be told, when the fiscus is down and out, and when the Minister of Treasury, Finances, all departments must get cut 5%. And now we have actually a letter that says this year they're going to cut by 8%. Joe, CFO, is here with me, acting CFO. So we get the same letter to say we're going to cut your budget by whatever percentage. When the 341 million was actually reduced from personnel, what Treasury did, they looked at our staff establishment and they said, but we've got too many people. and then they cut out personnel. That is why we have to go back and do the reprioritization of critical positions. And that also answers the question on how have we dealt with the critical positions. How have we dealt with the shortage? What we've done is, in all of the positions that were vacant, we prioritize areas where members have to be supported. And we tried the best we can, and I must say that the division managers did say, if I don't fill this research or content advisor position, it will definitely compromise the committee work. And we've tried to do the best we can with what we have. But I think a lot more will actually prevail when we provide yourselves with information and unpack who's doing what where and how we can reprioritize some of the services that we provided to yourselves. Honourable members, the parliamentary, let me just start off by saying, initially when the Parliamentary Budget Office was established, it didn't have budget. It still doesn't have budget. We take from the baseline and pass it on to the Parliamentary Budget Office. Naturally, the amended act that establishes the PBO has said it very clearly that that office is independent and it doesn't report to the accounting officer of Parliament. So it is going to be important for honourable members to have a discussion that really looks at how that office is strengthened and how is it funded going forward. I must say we have no response and no positive answer to what members are asking. Indeed, we are aware that the work of that office is very critical for all of Parliament. Instead of serving just the four committees, it has to serve as many members as the need arises. However, as we stand now, it's going to be useful for the interaction to happen directly with the PBO as well as with the executive authority. All we're doing, we're making sure that it is sustained within the budget. And I do want to explain that when we did a trend analysis and looked at the budget of Parliament, the baseline has never been revisited for many, many years. Let me not exaggerate and say many, many years. Let me just say for a long time. And when I was sharing with yourselves the pie charts, I was trying to show that if we take out PAMET, which cost us $61.6 million, if we take out direct charges of members, which is about $527 million, if we take out members' entitlements, which is about $243 million, you will see how much does it cost Parliament to run Parliament. Those figures distort the baseline of Parliament budget. So when we are given the $2 billion, it includes all those chunks. And I must say, honourable members, to date we pay former MPs, from the very baseline of $2.6 billion. These are all the amounts that are burdening the baseline budget of Parliament. And that pie chart starts to show members that we must take out those chunks. The permit and the medical aid of former members must not be in Parliament's budget because they distort the baseline. If they are removed, you will see how honest. We will then have an analysis of how much does it cost to run, to do oversight in Parliament? How much does it cost to do public participation? We don't know because the baseline, we can give, the Mr. Rashida and committees can actually give an analysis of how much you spend on oversight by just looking at the number of oversight that Parliament has carried on. And I think we should get into that space with honourable members so that we understand and unpack the budget as members are asking. Because we have amounts there. We have permit, we have post-retirement benefits of members, we have salaries of members whom we have no role over because the salaries of members are dealt with by the commission and not by ourselves. But we carry those amounts and they distort the baseline. So, co-chairs, I think I will just deal with those matters and then the rest of the colleagues will deal with the... I've dealt with the donor funds, I've dealt with the PBO, I've dealt with one of the Treasury Office I've dealt with, and I'm sure Acting CFO John Kuna, our CFO resigned last year. Mr. Kuna has been acting in his position until now, so he will deal with the other matters. Then, of course, I've got other colleagues who can deal with other related matters. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Nkuna.
Thanks, co-chairs and honorable members. One question I would try to respond is whether we've got enough money to spend at this stage. As the acting secretary indicated, we are short of about 394 from what we requested. So we don't have enough money. What happened after we received the money from National Treasury? We had to go back and relook at our players to see what is there that we can do without. But the money we have, we'll be able to spend on what we can, but there's something we wanted to do, but we cannot do because we don't have the money. The breakdown on the compensation of employees' budget, I'm not sure in this particular one whether we need the number, the position numbers, because if you can check on slide number 15. Let's just open and go to slide number 15. It does indicate that under program one strategic, the amount for compensation is 86.5. And if you want to go to the breakdown, that office can even show under the next slide. That's the amount which will make the 1.109 on compensation of employees under the other slide. And if you go to this individual offices, it will show that under strategic leadership, we've got office of the speaker, how much you spend there on compensation, office of the chairperson, how much. But if the members do need, we can provide the position numbers without the names. That in this office, we've got these positions costing so much, we can do that there. We can submit that information later. On revenue, honorable chairperson, what consists of on revenue? Parliament doesn't generate revenue like most of the government departments. Our only revenue here is the interest we get from the bank and the money we get from the sales of food at the restaurant. That's why normally as officials we normally encourage the honorable members to utilize our restaurants here than going outside so that we can boost our revenue. Those are our only revenue. It's interest and sales of food in the restaurant. The reasons for the budget cut, the acting secretary did indicate here that the reason is not due to underperforming or underspending. National Treasury just decided to cut the budget by a certain percentage. Right now for the 2020 MTF, we have received a letter that the budget will be cut by 5% in 2020, 7% in 2021, and 8% in 2022. And if we add all those costs, they come to 440. They don't even consult, they will just indicate this is called, they call it compulsory budget reductions. It applies everywhere. But then we have to request the executive authority to engage with the minister because the technocrats has got no control. If the minister has indicated that, there's nothing they can do. I think the next one will be the retained earnings of 17. The retained earnings of 17 is due to resignations during the course of the financial year. Normally, most of our retained earnings is on compensation of employees. You'll find that when we allocated the budget like now, 31.1, there will be resignations from now up to the end of the financial year. So at the end, they will add up to the retained earnings. The percentage of donor funding against the total budget for the current financial year, 2019-20, donor funding is 40 million, which constitutes about 1.56 of the total budget of Parliament. Thanks. I'm not sure if I might have left out any other question, but I think I've dealt with them. Thanks.
Acting Secretary, any additions that you want to make from your team or yourself?
I think there was a question on OISD. I think that will be when we make presentations for the on the structure and the functions thereof. If members agree to that, we will include it there. But there was a specific question on the CADA ASMAL report. That we can submit information. We don't have it here.
From the look of things, I see Honorable Stenhaven has a follow-up, and I'm going to allow him to make a follow-up. All three of you. Okay. Yeah, what?
Thanks very much. Just in terms of the compensation of members, you touched briefly on that as a result to Honourable Brass's question. These gratuities that are paid to members of Parliament, the loss of office gratuities, how much was budgeted for in this particular financial year? How are we doing vis-a-vis budget? as a result of the gratuities that actually played out? And how is that going to affect that particular line item in the budget going forward? And then my final question is, how much to date has been played out against that particular item in this financial year? Thank you.
Honorable Judith.
My question to the acting secretary was simply this. You say it's almost a pity that Parliament has to pay the members because it affects your baseline. Could you tell us where you would move it to? What would your suggestion be that you move ParMed, members' salaries, entitlements? Where else would it go, and wouldn't it just affect their baseline? At the end of the day, it's got to stay in the system somewhere. And are you blaming the amounts being paid to members for the fact that you're short on your budget? No, because effectively that's what you're saying. You're saying it's unfortunate we have to pay members. Because of that, we're actually out of budget now. I mean, let's put the blame where it is. The history over the past 5 years has led to a reduced fiscus. And that's why every department has to reduce their budgets and every institution has to reduce their budgets. It's not the fact that the members have the cheek to be asked to be paid. The reason is the mismanagement of finances over the past 10 years. That's the reason we all have to cut back. Let's be honest.
Any follow-up? No other follow-up. Okay. Honorable Mary.
Yeah. Just for interest sake, you know, in public service, there's what we call EAP, Employee Assistance Program. Is there a possibility that we can establish that kind of support for members? If we do have, I would like to know if it is functional, and then, yeah, is it in existence?
I'll start with an easier one. Indeed, we do have an EAP for members, and I think once Honorable Maburoto, and I think, I don't know who's going to be chairing the members' interest. Members, yeah, from the NCOP, because it's chaired by both houses. Mengwenya, once they activate that committee, it does deal with it. However, we do have, they even have a policy on members' wellness. It definitely is there. No, Honourable, I wasn't blaming anybody. I was saying we carry amounts of former MPs and former MPLs. So our point is, because it's in our baseline, when we look at our figures, it looks like this is a big budget. What we would prefer would really be for National Treasury to create a vehicle. These are former, not the current. The current is easy because it's the direct charge. That's not from. For instance, we carry 61 million of permanent members. That includes former members, and we even carry benefits of members before 1994. So there's a chunk, and there might be minimal before 1994, those are benefits. However, we carry that. Why would National Treasury not have a vehicle? And you are asking, what did we do? We've written 3 letters asking that, can this, in the same way, for instance, they carry the GEPF for the whole public service. It doesn't sit in the various 24 departments. It sits in National Treasury. So we've written 3 letters, and it's an area that we will push. Because once we take off that, because it's a spend that you don't direct, the beneficiaries are not yourselves. It's of former people, and you have priorities. Because if that amount were to move over, you would then see the gaps very clearly to say, we want to expand on oversight, we want to expand on public participation, and this is what it is. So that's what I was saying. We have made proposals, and I must just hasten to say that even Treasury said we should look at, for instance, with the permit thing, and get an actuarial scientist and see what is it that we can use as a vehicle to carry that amount of money. That's what it is. Thank you very much. Shebo?
Thanks. I think there was a question on the payment for the gratuities and how much we have paid so far. When we calculated initially, we calculated about 527 million for the 1920 financial year for the payment of member salaries and gratuities. Due to the facts, normally we will never know on the number of members who resigned or lost their seat after the elections. But what happened after the 2019 general election, a lot of members didn't come back. For now, when we calculate, we can see that we have got a shortfall of about 112 million on direct charges, which we have requested National Treasury to cover. But for direct charges, it's not a big issue, because if we underspend, we surrender to National Treasury. If we overspend, they give us the money. So far, we have paid about 76 million on loss of office gratuity up to today. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh, okay.
Sorry for that. I just want to know, based on this and the extra money that you had to spend this year, how does it impact on the relocation fees of returning members that's still not paid? They said July. Will it still be paid in July? Is there money? The question was never asked, do you have money left to spend? Am I clear?
Paying returning members who are not paid.
The relocation fee.
Oh, okay. Relocation fee for returning members. That's the question.
Sorry, establishment fee. I'm sorry.
Before you get to that, ma'am, I have asked a question about how do you deal with the sourcing of revenue, and you have given me the answer. The answer is that you are encouraging members to utilize the facilities that you are having as a way of generating revenue. I'm still firm on what I have said. As much as it's good that you encourage members to us as members to utilize your restaurant, I'm also requesting, can you please improve on your menu to be healthier? Because we are seated here. We eat unhealthy food and sit. We use our mind. We are not physical. It's very important to us. And also, I know it's not your responsibility. Honorable members, you'll forgive me. But you work together with the public works. And I've raised this in the induction workshop that we had for the NCOP. In 2014, the halls in the villages, they were renovated and transformed into gym. To date, those halls, they are renovated, but they don't have equipment. So in the partnership that you have and cooperative governance and the relationship that you have with public works, can you please talk to them and fast-track that, because it is going to be seen as a wasteful or fruitless expenditure. So I'm just saying, as your colleagues, just share that information on our behalf with them. Honorable Nyan.
Chair, the point that was made by Honorable Steenhuisen when we started about being clear, all of us, about our mandate, it's very important. So that is why when we adopted the program, it's indicating that on the 26th of July, we'll get to induction and try to understand what we can do and what we can't do. Because it will assist us to avoid a situation of turning this committee to ask things that are supposed to be relevant to what we're supposed to be doing. Like, some of the issues might be belonging to other committees, but might be relevant to us as our members to understand. But on that day of induction, it will minimize some of these questions that we'll end up getting to now. So that is why I support that now we adopted a program that is indicating that what will be happening on the 26th, and it would assist us. But anything that was not in line with the presentation that we're dealing with here, it won't do us any harm to attend plenaries and do justice to the day. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, madam, and the team. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll confine it to the answer that was given. May I just get confirmation that the loss of office gratuity allowance is as a result of a parliamentary policy? It's not something that falls under the purview of the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers Act, and therefore any amendments to that gratuity that may be considered would be a decision for this Parliament to take. Would that be a correct assessment of that? Or is it something that's gazetted in part of, and then I would ask the follow-up question, what would be the relevant body to look at amending that then?
Over to you,
madam. Let me just, I'm going to answer the other things. I think on the menu we take note, and the issue of the health, we will take note and we'll discuss in the right forum. Thanks, ma'am.
Thanks. The loss of office gratuity is not as a result of parliamentary service. There's a government gazette issued in 2008. I just don't know if the gazette number, but I can forward the quote of the gazette. So I think it's done by the same committee which is determining the salaries of members. I can provide the gazette number there. We don't have control on it. That's why it's part of direct charges.
I think we have exhausted the discussion on the presentation for today. And before we get to the next item, can I request you, madam, to commit on the two slides that we are sending, that you promised to send, as to by when can we expect those slides to be sent to members?
Definitely members will have them by tomorrow, because what we would like, we should send, just not the slides. We must provide you explanatory notes. That's going to be very, very useful. By end of day tomorrow, we will send to yourselves.
Thank you very much. And
I don't believe my Honourable Julius's question was answered about the establishment fees. Well, was it answered? It wasn't answered. The question was whether those going to be paid in July or not.
This is the establishment of the amounts that members receive when they return. Oh, the question is by when? All right. Yes, promise is by the end of July, because I know that my colleagues have been dealing with the new members completely, and that's what we explained when we were at the Chief Whip's Forum. It was committed at the end of July. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. That is on record, Honourable Julius. I'm sure many members are happy with that question. They wanted to ask it. Yeah, we will. Honourable members, thank you very much for the contribution. The meeting comes to an end. I know members have other commitments that they need to attend to. Thank you very much. See you in the next meeting. Thank you. Thank you.